Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations, and you're live with the best mind in Black America, me, Sean Williams, and this is the Cutting Edge Show. My guest co-host is Justin Jackson. He has a bachelor's degree in economics. Welcome back, Justin.
Thank you for having me back. It's good to talk to you as always.
Thank you. This evening, we are taking an in-depth look at the steps that need to be taken when starting a business. I am aware that some people do things differently. I know many of you have heard the quote, "If you fail to plan, you are planning to fail." So, Justin, what are the steps to starting a business?
Well, realistically, you know, there are 10 basic steps that, you know, people should take in starting a business. Now, obviously, you know, there are different types of businesses, and some businesses take different steps. Some businesses go more in depth. But in general, the top 10 main things that everyone should do is conduct market research. Now, depending on a business, that market research can be more very extensively, taking years to prepare, or it can be very relatively quick, you know, taking mainly even a couple of weeks or even months. Step number two is writing a business plan. A business plan is pretty much how you're going to run your business and really the framework of your business. Step three is fund your business. You know, no business can really run without proper funds. Right. So, and there's several different ways you can go about funding your business, whether it be through grants, whether it be through loan, equity, and other different methods as well. Fourth step, you need to pick a centralized location. You need to have an actual address for your business. Now, with that being said, with technology has advancing in the manner that it has, you'll see a lot of businesses might be headquartered in certain states based off of tax breaks that they get out of those states, but conduct most of their work elsewhere. Step five is choosing a business structure. It's really important on how you structure your business, and that really gets into more of like taxes and personal liability. So if something happens to your business, planning ahead, making sure that you're able to you know, handle those situations by the way you structure your own risk in your business. Six is you need to choose a business name. You need to have a name that some people put their own name on their business. Some people come up with something that means something personal to them. But whatever it is, every business has to have a name. Seven, you have to register your business. Getting, you know, an LLC, and file the necessary paperwork and things of that nature so that way that your business can be legal. Eight, you need to get federal and state tax ID. This is realistically how your business is going to pay and handle its taxes. And a lot of that comes back down to a couple of steps before, you know, what state you're in. And that's why research is really important because, you know, you might open up a business in one state, but if you would have done it in a different state, you could have had a lot more like tax relief and things of that nature. Number nine is applying for licenses and permits. Depending on the business that you decide you want to open up, there's different types of licenses and permits that are involved. That goes all the way down to even, you know, building a business itself. For example, if you open up a pizza restaurant or whatever the case may be, you might need heavy equipment to move some of the resources into the building. Some of those things have to have permits and licenses to even be able to do that as well. And then 10, you need to open a business bank account. Now, what's important about that business bank account is that create a line of credit for yourself. You know, having that, just like in our personal lives, we have, you know, our own personal business accounts and things of that nature. People look at how long a business account has been open, and they really put a lot of emphasis on that But two, that's really how you want to manage your cash flow as you're running your business. Those are the 10 steps that all businesses should, anyone who's looking to start a business, whether it be a mom and pop shop, small business, or you're looking to make a multimillion corporation, all 10 steps should be followed in nearly all businesses that are being started.
Well, I want to add one more to that, number 11, since you did 10. And people really do need to get business insurance because business insurance protects people from unexpected costs of running a business like accidents, lawsuits, natural disasters. So I thought I should throw that in.
That is true. And realistically, that actually falls underneath choosing a business structure. That's where you get into, like, your liabilities, like I was talking about before, you know, how much risk you're actually putting inside of your business yourself. That also incorporates, like, the insurance and things of that nature as well. But, I think, you know, it's very important to, you know, really talk about that directly because a lot of people don't think about that until it's too late. You know, insurance is one of those things that you hate to have to pay for and you hate that you have it, you know, until you actually need it, all right? So, you know, I think that's, you know, that's very important to, you know, even talk about it on its own as well, as you just mentioned.
Okay. 516-531-9540. Press 1 if you have a question or comment. Now, Justin, when you were mentioning starting the businesses, okay, you want to talk about some of the type of businesses? Like partnerships and because there are different types of businesses that people can have. For example,
yes, that's most
like
definitely. You can start like a C corp, a S corp business. Those are mostly the most. Those two are typically the most popular types. Main reason is because both of those types of businesses that are under the both the S and C corp, you know, really limits your liability to the business. For example, if you put in, you know, $500,000 of your own personal money inside of a business and you want to be the sole head of the business, you know, and you open your business in such a manner, you know, you're not just investing that $500,000. You know, someone can come in and say someone has an accident and sues you for $5 million because you're the sole owner of the business. You know, you can be indebted for that. That's why a lot of people choose to take the wrap of a C corp or S corp because then you're only at risk however much money you put in there. For example, if you put $500,000 into a business and let's say someone comes in, slips, falls, break the neck, right? And they sue you for, you know, $10 million and win. Well, guess what? They're not going to sue you. They're going to sue the actual business itself, right? So let's say the business can't cover those expenses. You can actually file a bankruptcy in order to, you know, cash out on a lot of those liabilities that you now have because without it actually affecting your personal finances. Now, a lot of people make the mistake of thinking, whatever the business make is what I make. That's a big mistake that, you know, people who are new to this type of thing, you know, make. In reality, you know, you need to set aside an actual salary that you're going to pay yourself because the business has to make money on its own. And as the business is up and running, making those, making money, and you're getting a return on your investment and things of that nature, for example, if somebody, like a lawsuit or something like that was to happen, you know, your business is what's going to be, you know, affected and not them coming and taking your house, your car, your kids' clothes, your kids' college tuition, and all those types of things of that nature. You have some protection there. And honestly, you know, that's good and bad because that can also be exploited. You see a lot of wealthy people, you know, such as Donald Trump, who have taken advantage of that. They have started businesses and literally ran them into the ground and ripped off their investors, ripped off their stakeholders, and just took in the money and ran with it. So there's a lot of different ways that, you know, a person can structure their business to limit the amount of risk that they have for themselves. Does that make sense?
Okay, it does. And I have a question. Now, which one of the corporations, the C-Corp or the S-Corp, do they have double taxation?
Excuse me. Great question. So I can actually explain, you know, realistically both of those to you so that way the callers can understand as well. As far as a C-Corp, under the United States federal income tax law refers to any corporation that is taxed separately from its owner. So a C-Corp is designated, is distinguished from an S-Corp, which generally is not taxed separately. So what does that mean? When you're looking at taxation, if when you have a C-Corp, you typically, for your own financial gains, are taxed twice, right? Your business is taxed, and then you also are taxed another time when you're paying, when you pay yourself. So let's say that you have a business, let's say you have a bakery, right? And in this bakery, you're running a really good bakery, you generate $1 million, okay, in a business revenue. Well, you're going to be taxed on your, that money that's coming in is going to be taxed under the business tax guidelines, right, under a C-Corp. And then you're going to be taxed again whenever you pay yourself your salary or your bonuses, however you decide you want to structure that. Whereas in an S-Corp, it all is taxed one time. You know, you only get one tax. So because you're taking on more liability, you know, with the S-Corp.
We have a caller. 8051, do you have a comment or question?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I have a question. Okay, I'm listening to all this expertise from your guest host. I want to know, if you have a business, and if you don't, why not? You know, you seem to know all the loopholes, and from what I'm listening to, you should be able to make it without starting a business and not working for someone else. Also, if you don't have a business, how can we believe everything you're telling us if you don't have anything to show for it?
Great question. So first off, I guess that was a personal question to me, as if first question was, do I have my own personal business? At the moment, I do not have my own personal business, and I believe your second question was, why not? The main reason why I do not have my own personal business at the moment is because you don't necessarily need to just jump in. I know in our previous call talk last week, we talked about gaining experience inside of a industry, so that way you learn the ins and outs of the business before, and you learn it on someone else's dime, someone else's watch. You know, when you start in a business, that's not something you want to take very lightly. That's something that, you know, you really want to make sure you have your dots and things in order to lead yourself to the highest success rate possible, because several businesses open and start each year and fail. You know, there are a lot of failed businesses, right? So by having that experience and exposure, you know, before and seeing some of the pitfalls and seeing some on landmines that's out there in the industry that you want to start your business in, it's a lot better personally to learn those things, you know, on someone else's risk, on someone else's dime, and on someone else's watch, right? Now, just to get into that a little bit more, I am in process of actually conducting my research to start my business. One business that I'm very intrigued on starting is my own dispensary. And that takes a lot of money. And it takes also a lot of research as well. As tax laws and federal laws, as state laws and federal laws are continuing to change and the marijuana industry is continuing to be more widely accepted, that's going to be a very booming industry. And the economic world set, we call that an early start. If you get in early, you're not guaranteed to make profit, but it's a high likelihood of you, you know, having huge profits in an early stage rather than waiting for that market to be saturated. So right now, that is what I'm doing. Third question you asked was, how can you trust what I'm saying? What I'm saying is out there for anyone to be able to do their own research. For ours, the 10 steps goes for a person, you know, starting their own business. You can actually log on to the SBA.gov website, which is a website that actually helps and promotes small businesses, small businesses, and help you get them started and also help you find funding. So everything I said isn't something that I just made up or pulled out of the hat. This is stuff that you actually can go on, look into, and if you are interested in starting a business, which I hope everyone, you know, at least, you know, take an opportunity and even explore it, you know, these are the measures that you want to do. It's always good to gain outside help and get resources from people who have done it before because experience does matter.
One more question. How long should your research take? Should it take a year, 2 years, 3 years, while you can be making some money?
Well, that's a good question. So when it comes to research, depending on the type of business that you want to start, it really depends, right? For example, me wanting to start my dispensary. It takes starting your own dispensary takes a lot of research, especially right now and today. It doesn't necessarily have a designated timeline of needing to have it done in 1 year, 1 month. That's not research isn't something that you want to rush, especially given in our current environment with the pandemic that's going on with the coronavirus. You see people are rushing to get these vaccines out. You know, well, before they release their vaccine, they have to have actual data to use. You know, and like I said at the beginning of this talk, that, you know, depending on the type of business that you want to start, that research can take anywhere from weeks to months, as far as years. The reality is you need to make sure you evaluate how much time, effort, and energy that you're putting into it, and also the return that you are expecting back as well.
I have another caller. 6120, do you have a comment or question?
The appropriate answer for the caller who challenged you on some issues, but what I wanted to say was if you could talk about some of the funding sources for businesses, and also the caller who called in, I think she should know first and foremost that business is a game for risk takers, and that's not something you just want to, you know, you dab in. It's more of a passion than it is about generating wealth or anything of that nature. So you also have to do a lot of market search to see what competitors out there, what angles they're taking. Yeah, this is not something that's done overnight. It takes a great deal of time and effort in order to actually launch a project. And what I would also say is that if you want to get the quickest way to become a business owner is to buy some stock. That's the most efficient way to go about it. So if you just wanted to be a business owner, go buy some stock. And you can do that in Robinhood and do that in no time flat and become a business owner.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Just to answer your question that you asked, you know, about funding. Yeah, go ahead. Are you breaking up? I can't hear you.
I just wanted to ask you if you could talk about some your funding sources, like venture capitalists, or getting loans from family members, or saving up money to fund the project yourself. So if you could just talk about that. So.
Yeah, most definitely. So there are actually several different ways that people can go about when it comes to getting funding for businesses. And like I said, each business itself is unique. So not one business, there's not one structure plan for you to follow that's going to be a set for all businesses, right? So one of the first ways you can fund your business is by self-funding, right? That means that you're taking your own money, whether it's money that you saved up or whatever the case may be, and you take that money and start your business, right? Now, that right there is one of the most rewarding ways because, you know, you literally only have to answer to your customer, right, whether it's a product or a service that you're providing, okay? And with it being your own money, you have complete control of how that funding is being used, okay? Second way that you can receive funding. It's through investors, okay? Now, when you're working with investors, one of the things that's really important to have is a very detailed and structured business plan. Because when you're pitching your business to investors, and investors can be anyone, okay? Anyone can be an investor. As you just said, Carla, you know, the stock market, you know, all that is funding. All that money that you're doing when you're buying stock is you're giving your money to a business and hopes and trust that you're going to get gains from it afterwards, right? So as far as investing, you can have your family members invest into you. You can have other there's a whole industry strictly on simply investing. And you can get a lot of capital that way. Now, one of the cool things about investing when you're working with investors that you need to think about is how do you want to structure that, right? Because you can structure that in the means of a loan, or you can structure that in the means of equity, okay? Now, the difference is if you structure that, the funding from investors as a loan, you have to understand that that's a liability, right? At the end of the day, that's money that you have to pay back. Typically, there's a promissory note that's going to be attached along with that, which actually legally binds you into paying that money back, okay? Now, one of the safer ways to work with investors is to convince them to buy in equity inside of your company. Reason why that's more that's safer for the business owner is because let's say like a lot of businesses, I believe it's over three-fourths of all businesses fail. Okay, so imagine you're running a business and you know things doesn't go your way with no fault of your own. You know, you went in, you have your business model, you structured it, and you're doing all the necessary things, but ultimately the business failed. By having investors put equity inside of your company, you're not liable to that money, whereas in a loan, you are liable for those things. And then the third way that you can structure your finances is actually getting loans, okay? Loans, you can go to the bank, present your business plan, your business model, and ask the bank for a loan and show them how you plan to pay that money back. And you can get funding that way as well. And then the last one that I think is pretty important as well is through grants. Depending on the industry, but realistically, any business, there are a lot of grants that are out there. And grants are really cool because that's free money. You know, at the end of the day, nothing in the world is free, but that is actual money that the government and also other nonprofits can actually invest into you, and that's something that you do not have to pay back. So if I'm a person right now and I'm in a situation where I don't have money, you know, I don't know anyone to invest in me, and I want to start my business, the biggest way I would go about it is first get as much grant money as you can to start that business, to get the business up and running and flowing. That way you have cash flow coming in. And then the second way I would go about it is to try to actually get investors to invest into you through equity. That right, those two, if you're able to get your business up and running and moving along with just those two, guess what? You started a business without putting any of your own money up. And then if the business do fail, you're not liable to actually pay back any of those money. And then obviously you have this, the investing. And you can't put your own money into a business as well.
Okay, I have another caller. 5240, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a question, a real quick question. With the COVID and the getting the vaccine, like five and all them, so if I had like $2,000, it's too late for me to invest in that in the stocks of Pfizer, you know, for the, what I'm saying is it's too late for me to put money into that that stock.
The vaccine?
Yeah, the vaccine stock, Pfizer and Kedora.
So I would, what I would say to you, caller, is it's never too late for you to buy stock inside of a company, right? Now, the whole objective, especially when we're talking about, like, investing and buying stock, the most important thing is, you know, to get in early. Because the earlier you get in, the higher chances of, the more amount of money that you can get on your return, right? For example, this really is the most fundamental aspect of buying stock is to buy low and sell high, right? So even with the vaccine, you know, you can invest right now. Let's say that it's $1,000 a share, okay? You can take, you know, $500 and get half a share. You know, you can actually get into a conglomerate where you and other people are in a pack and you guys decide to put your money together to go buy some high-end stock, right? And you can do it that way as well. But the whole objective, regardless of when you get in, is to always try to sell for a profit. Now, you do have to realize, you know, there is a risk. You know, it can't backfire. And just using the vaccines, for example, that's a sign right now that you decide you want to buy shares into these medical research companies who are presenting their vaccines. Nothing has been passed for them to be able to actually put that out there. The holdup right now is that they're still waiting for congressional approvals and for the FDA to actually give them the green light. So it's still a risk right now because even though they feel that they've done their research, they feel like they have a product and it's ready to be manufactured and it's safe and they can mass produce it. Well, if the FDA, you know, comes in and put the red tape on it, guess what? That stock is going to drop tremendously overnight. That's an overnight drop, right? At the same time, and that's where the risk comes in, okay? Now, because it hasn't even been green lighted right now, if you go and buy stock right now, once that gets the green light, you're going to see a jump. It might not be as big of a jump as if you was to do it earlier, but that still would be a profit that you can make off of that. You know, so it's never like, and when you're buying stock, I always tell people, you know, it's just like starting a business. It's never too late to start a business, you know, but you always got to evaluate the risk and how much risk that you are willing to consume on yourself and never get yourself too deep into the waters where you won't be able to pull yourself out. Does that make
sense? I have another caller. Hold on 1 second. 1111, do you have a question or comment?
One, 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 are you online?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, we can hear you. How are you doing today?
Hello?
We can't hear. Yes, we can hear you.
I'm trying to see if I'm the caller. Am I the caller?
Yes, oh, you're the caller. Yes.
All right. Yeah, I want to comment on what you said earlier about this business. Normally when you do a business and when you're doing a grant, you can't just go and get the grants before the business. You gotta get a grant. You gotta get a paper that applies for the grant. And you gotta put everything you need in this business,
mm-hmm.
and put the prices down. Put down how much everything is gonna cost. And when you do
exactly.
all that, yeah, you send it back, and they'll send you the amount that's on there. You know.
The amount of money,
you know, because if they give you so much money, you're going to have to put down everything you need. It's got to add up to that money that they gave you. Then you got to send that paper back. Then they'll send that check.
Right. And just talking a little bit more in depth about the grants, you know, though a grant is, you know, free money, it's not like, hey, we have money, we're just going to throw it at the wall and see what sticks, you know.
Yeah.
They take these grants very seriously. Like when you're talking about applying for a grant, you know, there are stipulations in grants where it says, okay, there are some grants that will give you money, but part of the conditions of the grant is that you must maintain so much of a minority presence inside of your company. Some grants are structured in a manner where you must save X amount of dollars per year. And there are some grants that are structured, and when it comes to grants in general, you have to read over. That's why the first step in starting your business is research. That's why that research is so important, because when you're conducting your research, this is all the information you need to be getting. You can't be, you know, thinking that you're out of the research phase, because the research phase never really stops. You know, you have a massive research phase at the beginning, but you always are going to continue to do research because you want your business to grow. If your business isn't growing, then, you know, you got to, you know, what my football coach always told us, you're not improving, you're failing. You know, there isn't anything in between, right? Now, when it comes to businesses, that's not always the case where, you know, you might find yourself at a plateau, you know, but you always want to be looking for that next opportunity to take your business to the next level. And when you are looking at these grants, and even loans are structured if a bank or investors decide that they want to invest in, you know, give you capital to start your business, they might have red tape along those similar lines where it's like what they want to see, one, you know, how much is everything is going to cost, like you said. They want to see how you going to spend your money. But one of the most important things that, you know, investors, banks, and even grants want to see is how you plan on paying yourself. You know, a lot of people don't think about that, you know, when they first start a business is how am I going to pay myself? I know there's, for example, if you watch Shark Tank, that's the question they ask every single person who's up there looking for investments.
Yeah,
they ask you, how do you pay yourself? How do you pay yourself? How do you pay yourself?
Yeah.
You know, that's something that is really important. What were you saying, Carla?
Yeah, I actually took the business plan. I went to class for, you know, do this business plan. So I did the business plan. And you can put, if you want to put the house in it, you want to do your business, you could write, you could do the business, you could put all that in that business plan. You could put the whole thing in there. Because I actually done it. So, and then is that grant, I mean, for, then you... Sometimes you can you get in front of investors, and most of the time they're willing to help you, but you got to put it in a vision where they can, you know, throw the idea out there like it's a vision for them, and then it's got to be a rural area where, like, is it a need for this business? Is it going to make some money? You know, and so a lot of times when an investor, you throw this out to the investor and they see that, well, this is going to increase some more jobs, it's going to bring more jobs in, or they're on board pretty much.
And everything always results down to the bottom dollar, you know.
Yeah.
As far as investors or even people who are giving loans, they want to know what are their returns, what are they going to receive. And when you're structuring your business, that's what you have to think about. That's one of the things that you have to put inside your business makeup. You know, is one, how am I going to reward my investors? How am I going to reward my employees? And that's why they actually is broken down into two different sets. One is a stakeholder, and others are shareholders, as if you're publicly trading your company, right? Now, your stakeholders are everyone that's going to be involved in your business, everyone that has any stake in your business. That's going to be your customers. That's going to be your investors. That's going to be your employees. That's going to be your board, if you have a board. That's going to be you, you know. Everyone who has a stake in that company is considered a stakeholder, right? And when you're making your business model, in order to make it very luxurious to want people to invest, for example, if you could go back 20 years right now, I bet you everyone on this call would invest in Amazon, would invest in Google, you know, would invest in Facebook because you know what the turnout is, right? So it's really important to show how you going to pay, how you going to use those funds.
Yeah, but it's not always the case. You know, a business is not always getting out big money. It depends on what kind of business you're trying to get. And, you know, some businesses don't have to take a big loan out for it, you know.
Right.
Yeah, because think about the little boy that sits there and sells lemonade. And, you know, that's a little business he has, or, you know, somebody who's, It just depends on what kind of business you're trying to get, and you know, and it can. a lot of times, it's, to me, it's better to start, like, doing it, you know, start something that you like to do, and you real mm-hmm. good at it, and start getting your little customers, you know, like how people like maybe a handcraft jewelry, and you start doing this handcraft jewelry, and you start selling it in your little neighborhood and stuff. And then when you mm-hmm. do finally open a business, okay, you got a lot of customers. And the best thing is word of mouth. You're gonna bring more customers. Your business is gonna start building. You know, you're gonna start building that money up. To me, if I could do it all over again, I would start, you know, creating my customers first. And that way, when you open up, you have, you know, you done had a whole. You can't help. You don't have to sell because you done brought all these customers. Word of mouth get around real fast, and that makes that money.
Most definitely. Word of mouth is the best advertisement you can possibly have.
And be well known. You're well known when you know, start doing it that way, and then you open that business up.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, like,
yeah.
when it comes to like starting the business, you know, the best. The second best, what I would say, is the second best, you know, thing about starting a business other than, you know, working off of someone else is by being in business. When you are finally the head honcho, when it's all on your shoulders, that's the experience that you can't gain unless you're in the business, you know, and you feel different types of pressure. And you see things a little bit different than when, you know, you're working off of someone else's dime and clock, right? And like you said, you know, a lot of businesses themselves, I mean, not all businesses are the same. You don't need $1 million to start a business, you know. It depends on what kind of business you want to start, right? If I wanted to start my own amusement park, I'm going to need a lot of money, right? Now, let's say I want to start my own daycare, for example. You don't necessarily need a lot of money to start your own daycare, you know. Like,
it depends on what kind of daycare you want to start.
Huh?
It just depends on what kind of daycare you're trying to get.
Exactly.
Like, if you're doing an
in-house
daycare, you know, you might not need a whole lot of money. But you know what? Daycare people,
you don't need $1 million.
They make a lot of money because,
right,
first of all, they charge whatever price they want to charge. And then they have those meals, like whatever meals they give them, like breakfast, lunch, snack. They get paid for that. They get paid for all
mm-hmm.
everything they give your child, you know. You get paid for that too. And then you got people who can't afford daycare, so they go to the resource place and they pay for them. So you get that check every month. They pay, you know. I mean, it's a lot of money if you're really good at daycare.
Yeah, there's money out there to be made, and that's the only reason why we've been having this conversation, because a lot of people are like, I need a job, I need a job, I need a job. You know, like, hey, you know, what do you have to do? Let's see how we can take your own natural skill set, your own natural talent, and your own natural passion, and make money off of that. You know, one of the things I think about is, you know, how Apple first got started. You know, it got started in a garage, and realistically, the person who actually invented the software, most people don't even know his name. Most
Google too.
Didn't
they start low too? Google started small.
Yeah, Google started. Google, Apple, Amazon. Yeah, you know, a lot of these mega companies that we see today, you know, started in a garage. You know, you don't always got to have, you know, a multi-platform building and things of this nature. Realistically, you have to make your business plan and figure out, okay, ultimately, what it is that I'm doing. One business that a partner of mine, where he's already started his business, and it's a recruiting service. Now, when it comes to that recruiting service, you know, at the end of the day, you are the money. You know, your employees are your money. The more recruiters that you have, you know, the more money you have the opportunity of making. And that's not something that you're manufacturing. That's a service. You know, would that say if you want to wash cars, you know, guess what? The more cars you wash, the more money you're going to be able to make. The main thing that you have to do, though, in all those things is you have to calculate and understand what we like to call your overhead costs. Now, your overhead cost is as simple as that. What does it take for me to provide the good or services that I'm providing, right? Far as when it comes to, you know, the recruiting thing, you look at LinkedIn, which is a mega platform that a lot of people go on to find jobs, right? Well, you can get LinkedIn Recruiter for $20,000 a year, right? Now, at the end of the day, you know, that's just one, two deals, right? You can get, like, the tools and services that you need to, you know, start your business. You know, that's where the research comes in handy. When people say that you don't need to do no research, you know, I don't see too many successful businesses that are out there that didn't do any research.
Let me ask you something.
Just in a, huh?
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Let's say that you had two barber shops.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one go offer more than the other one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. One going to offer more than the other.
One's going to offer more than the other.
Everybody has, like, a beautician they're going to go to that does a better job
mm-hmm.
than the other one, right? So who you think going to make
mm-hmm.
the most money? Sometimes when you open a business.
Who I think is going to make the most money?
Uh-huh. Who you think? Go ahead.
I think the person who's going to make the most money, it really depends on the business management, right? And what do I mean by that is one, as a barber or a beautician, you know, far as what someone likes, that's a personal assessment. Yeah, that's one thing we have to realize when you're looking at businesses, what some things are different to other people. Some people might like the way you do your hair this way. Some people
yeah.
might hate that. You know what
See?
I mean? So it's all about making sure that you are able to provide the services and needs to your customers the way, in that particular industry, the way that the customer wants it. In some instances, you know, if we take it out of, like, the beauty selection and we take it into something that we all use, such as cell phone service or internet service, you know, sometimes that's the only thing you have around. You can give crappy service because there's the market share in that area is so consolidated, but you don't have to work as hard. You know, for example, I grew up in Paducah, Kentucky. The main thing there is Comcast. I mean, there's nothing else. If you don't have Comcast, you really don't have any internet. And then guess what? AT&T came in and provided a little bit of competition. But at the end of the day, Comcast still control a large part of the share of the market. You know, so that's why market knowledge is very important. Is okay, looking at what your competitors are doing, and not necessarily always how you're going to be different, but how are you going to get a piece of their market? You know, and then two, how are you going to, you know, build that market to increase the market so that way you have a bigger market share? And that's what you really have to look
Justin,
at. Okay,
Justin, hold on for one second. We have another caller that's been waiting
okay.
for a minute. Hold on a second. 9807, do you have a question or comment?
I do have a question. I want to go back to the insurance part for the S
okay.
corporation that you were speaking
for the
of.
Corporation?
And
okay.
You were talking about the S corporation and
mm-hmm.
about liability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So my question is, would not the insurance that you get take care of that?
It depends. It depends on the insurance that you get. Like, now, when you look at insurance, the easiest way to look at insurance is to look at it like car insurance, okay? When you're getting car insurance, they go over your limits, you know. You might pay, let's say, $100 a month for car insurance, right? Well, that $100 a month that you're paying provides you a certain amount of insurance. It might be, hey, we're going to pay up to, you're going to have a $500 deductible. Right. When you're talking about a business, they
right.
might have a larger deductible. They might say, hey, up until $500,000, you're on your own. After that, your
so maybe
insurance
I,
kick in.
Maybe,
huh?
Maybe I'm not asking the question correctly. Maybe I should
okay.
say, would you not be able to get sufficient enough
mm-hmm.
insurance to cover
mm-hmm.
that liability with the S corporation?
Right. So, and what I would say to that is it really depends because no one knows the future, right? If you have insurance under, even underneath that S corporation If you have insurance, they're going to put a limit on there. They're not going to say, we're going to cover anything and everything that's bad that's going to happen to you. No insurance company is ever going to say that to you, you know.
Right, I agree with that.
But there's always going to be limits. That's why I can't say that the insurance is automatically going to cover that, because it might not, you know, because you got to realize as an insurance company.
Exactly, corporate insurance does cover. Now, corporate insurance, okay, is used by large corporations, and it covers various operational risks such as theft, financial losses, employee health benefits, and accidents.
Right. Okay. And all those things have limits on those.
Right. Well, that I do know about, but I was just wondering if you could get the amount of insurance that so that you wouldn't have to worry about having insurance with the S corporation and then having a separate insurance. You understand what I'm saying? Why could
like
you not just
for
have
yourself?
One be sufficient for everything? Huh?
So when it comes to, like, when you look at insurance, insurance is all about negating risk, okay? So what does that mean? The more insurance you have, that's the lower amount of risk that, you know, is actually being put on you for those things that the insurance covers, right? So you can find it. You might, you know, decide, hey, I don't need, you know, $1 billion worth of insurance. I don't see in my business model where I will be liable for $1 billion, right? You might, you know, get a $500 million insurance policy, right? Where you, it covers, you know, literally $500 million, whether it's being broken down into, you know, being sued, damages, loss. You know, Michelle just went over pretty much his list, but when you're looking at insurance in itself, that's a whole nother, you know, thing that you have to juggle when you're doing your research. Is depending on how much risk that you want to take onto yourself. You want small insurance?
Like, I'm going to have to jump in right here, because for $1 million policy, it will cost you between $300 and $1,000 per year. For $2 million worth of coverage, it's going to average between $500 and $1,300 a year.
Oh, okay. That's not bad. If it covers the things you needed to cover,
Right. For me,
and that's why I always say think about it like kind of like car
insurance.
You know,
also,
because it just makes it simpler to think about.
And I have to keep a minimum of at least $1 million coverage a year.
Most
as a minimum.
Do. I mean, that's actually a low amount.
Because with the contract that I have with the insurance company, it's required.
Because, I know, for example, my job right now, you know, I'm an IT recruiter, right? We actually go over insurance policies, what we insure, because we actually have candidates that are on our books that we actually pay for. And so when we are getting agreements in place for other companies, one of the things we talk about, some of the things that might come up is, well, how much insurance do you have? We always give them the lowball answer. You know, you always lowball them. So if you have, you know, $500 million of insurance, if you have a $500 million insurance policy, you don't want to go and when you're doing your agreements saying that, well, I have a $500 million insurance, because that means if something happens, they're trying to get all of that $500 million, right, which is going to jack your rate up, you know. So, like, you always, you know, you always want to try to, you know, I don't make it seem like you don't have as much as you do. But in reality, you want to always make sure you have enough insurance that you are covered. That's really important. That's how you negate a lot of risk when you're running your business.
Right. Right. Well, the reason I'm asking, because, you know, when you are trying to start a business, you have a lot of things that you're trying to do, you know, and one of, you know, you try to get the things off your plate that you can do right away and finish with that. You know, and if you have the right type of insurance, you don't have to worry about something. You know what I'm saying? Because that's taken care of, you know. So that's why I was asking.
And like one of those big ones is the name just slipped from me. What is it called when you, like they say you slip and you hurt yourself at work? so? Your work got to pay for that?
Compensation.
Workers' comp, yeah. Workers' comp insurance, you know. That's like, hey, I got, you know, you don't tell your employees how much workers' comp insurance you have because, like I said before, if that's knowledge that they know, they always are going to try to get the maximum. You know, this is a money game. There's a lot of money out there to be made. There's a lot of money out there to be lost. So, you know, people are always going to try to get their hands on as much amount of the money of yours in an insurance company as possible. But, like, for example, workers' comp insurance, right, that helps negate the risk of, you know, if you run in a business and one of your employees, you know, cut the finger off or they slip and fall and they break their leg. Well, now they're suing the company, you know, but you have insurance to cover that. So you're not coming out of your pockets, you know, to cover that cost. And that's why, you know, insurance negates risk. The whole concept of risk is how much am I putting of my own stuff at stake, right? That's what's really important. And at the end of the day, when it comes to that, you want to always try to alleviate as much of that as you can. You want to try to have a low amount of risk as possible while getting the biggest reward, which means, you know, making the most amount of money as possible.
Right. I agree. Well, thank you.
Not a problem. Hey, that's what I'm here for.
We have another caller. 1053.
Just going to make a comment now. I want to make a comment. Now you talk about the insurance. I think the lady and your guest made the example that if you have a workman's comp or some type of accident or something on your business, in your business, well, first of all, when you file the claim, you don't have nothing to do with who's going to settle that claim. The insurance company, they settle that. I know this from experience because I had a business, and the lady said that she stepped in a hole on my property and twisted her ankle, and she sued me. Mm-hmm. She sued me. And she sued me, and she hired an attorney. And the attorney said that, well, we want to sell it for $13,000. I said, $13,000? That's what I was saying, $13,000. So the insurance company came to me, and they said, well, the lady wants to sell that claim for $13,000. I said, she said she twisted her ankle in my business? They said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I started arguing with the insurance agent. You know what he told me? He said, you ain't got nothing to do with this. Once you file the claim, you out of it. You out of it. This is left up to the insurance company. So the insurance company, no matter how you feel or what you think, the insurance company is going to sell that claim. They normally will sell it for amount that they can sell it without paying an attorney. Anytime insurance come to you, agent, and they tell you when they offer you more money than the if they try to get you to get more money than a lawyer will pay to go to court, they won't settle with that. They make you take less. You take less, they'll settle it. But up until the point of law of the fees, legal fees. So that's one point I just want to point out. Once you make the claim, you don't have any say so with insurance. It's all about the insurance company.
And if you think about that too, Colin, you know, just going to piggyback on a little bit off of that, you know, that's similar. If let's say you with car insurance, you know, if you're in a car accident, you know, before you call your insurance, if you're like, hey, you know, let's not get the insurance involved, I can pay this, and the person agrees, it is what it is. So once you guys call and get the insurance companies involved, you know, they're gonna handle that. And like you said, with lawyers, you got to realize lawyers work by the hour. So once you get a lawyer on there, at the end of the day, the lawyer's looking for his bottom dollar as well. So he's going to try to put as many hours on paper down, even if he or she is not working that hard on the case. They're going to try to build that up because they're trying to make a profit as well. They're trying to make their money as well. And that's why people try to keep the lawyers out of it.
Well, that's exactly what I was getting ready to tell you. I settle my own accident claims. And I had one about 2 or 3 years ago with an insurance company, and I told them point blank, I said, look, I know how much you can sell for because in the state that I live in, you can only get X amount of dollars for certain claims, and that's all you can get. It's usually around $13,000 or something like that, $10,000. That's all you're going to get, period. I don't care whether you got a lawyer or not. That's all you're going to get. So I told the agent, I said, no, I'm not going to play any games with you. I know that a lawyer would sell it for $13,000. I'll tell you what I'll do. Give me $12,000 cash, and I'll have $1,000 to play with you. And they sell that. And you know what? They gave me everything that the lawyer would have. They gave me more than what I was asking for. That's right. Mm-hmm. So it's negotiable.
Yeah, I actually have an experience with this, you know, in my current job, you know, where we have an agreement with companies, you know, when we place candidates at certain jobs, you know, we give them a payable. They don't give us the money, you know, the first day or before the candidates works. Typically they have like a net 30 days or a net 15 days where, you know, once the candidate starts there, you know, that's when the clock ticks for when they have to pay us. And our company even said, you know, over $20,000, it's just not worth it for us to go and take a company to court over because we're going to pay more than $20,000 in legal fees. So that's going to loss us. You know, we use that as tactic to scare people to, you know, paying us the money. But like once it gets to an absurd amount, you know, where let's say a company owes us, you know, $500,000. It's like, okay, well, we can get our lawyers involved in that because at the end of the day, versus how much we're gonna have to pay our lawyers to, you know, to run us through the process through the court to get all the litigation out of the way, you know, we're still gonna come out ahead. You know, so and that's even in the case, like I said, I always say car insurance is because that's something everybody has dealt with in some form or fashion, you know, and that's something they can, like, recall on. That's why I always use car insurance. But I had a friend, you know, Adrian, who was into a car accident, a car hit her. And the insurance company came to him and said, hey, you know, we'll give you $1,000. Actually, I think it was like $500 they said they was going to give him. And he was like, well, no, I don't want to take that. You know, he hired a lawyer, and the lawyer ended up getting her $3,000. You know, they actually end up paying, I think it was $5,000, and the lawyer took $2,000 and she took $3,000. You know, so
right.
There's when it comes to that, you know, when you're the one being sued, always, you know, you always want to try to settle it. But like when an insurance company is offering you money, you know, a lot of times, you know, getting a lawyer involved to make sure you get the, you know, the maximum amount of money, you know, is sometimes a good thing as well. You got to just, you know, look at the risk. How much money is at stake? And, you know, realistically, are you going to lose money or gain money by doing this?
Yeah, I want to make a quick comment about the starting up a new business.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the most important things in starting up a new business, you have to be in a position where you can sustain your own living. For example, if you're starting a business, you need some cash reserve. You need to have a place to stay or have somebody you're staying with. You have to have your essential bills taken care of before you even think about starting a business. You have to know how you're going to survive with food, electric and water, and rent or mortgage. You know, take care of those type of expenses. And once you do that, then you can save. You're going to have to have some kind of cash reserve where you can get your business started. So that's the most important thing. You have to be stable enough to start a business, to get a business off the ground, no matter how you do it. But you have to become stable. Either you can do it through your friend or your partner or somebody, but you have to have stability just to cover your basic overhead. Once you cover your basic overhead, then you can talk about starting a business. A lot of people want to start a business, but they don't even know how they're going to pay their rent next month or their mortgage payment next month. They don't know how they're going to pay the utilities and want to start a business. Unless you have somebody that can assure you to cover those other expenses for your living, you can forget about starting a business. It's not going to happen, I don't think.
I agree.
Oh, Carl, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would you recommend, depending on what your business is, at this day and time, you know, with coronavirus and everything else, how do you feel about home-based business?
How do I feel about what now?
Home-based business.
Oh, I think that's the way to go. I've been doing home-based myself for years. I very seldom interact with people other than over the phone and email. That's how my business operates. I've always done that for years. I mean, my phone, I've been like 15, almost 20 years. I've operated it like that. Mostly done my business online. I do most of my business online. And it's very seldom that I will do business in person. And I think that right now, since it's now, almost everybody's doing business now online, so people are waking up. You can make a lot of money online if you know how to talk.
Yep.
'Cause if you know how to talk and communicate with people, I'd rather do it really than I've gotten lazy. I'd rather do business over the phone and email than be in person any day. And so that's the skill that people need to pick up on.
Yeah, because you can get so much more work done. Technology, a lot of people don't realize, you know, technology is really empowering people to be able to make their own money, you know. I know a lot of one way, if you want to get into business, let's say you wanted to jump into business, you know, by the end of the year or the beginning of the year. One of the things you can do is go in business and literally live off of Amazon. You know, you can buy and sell products
right off
Amazon. You know, and you never have to handle the product or any of those things, you know. And that's becoming very, very popular, and a lot of people are advertising it. And it created a whole new market to actually teach people how to do it. That's a market in itself as well. So, there's money out there to be made. Yeah.
Right. I think with Corona, I think a lot of people are seeing opportunities now to do business online because they didn't have it before. But now they can see the opportunity for doing business online. And I tell you, I'd rather do business online than to have to go and drive from customer to customer and do business. I'd rather do it online. And I think that's a plus. It's a plus.
I mean, it cuts down on your overhead costs, you know, because you got to think about, you know, when you are running, you know, a physical business place, like when you actually have a physical business, you got to realize it costs to turn the lights on, you know, it costs to heat it, it costs to travel back and forth, you know, all those things are part of overhead costs that, you know, goes into your market research and your business plan when you're setting it up. So, you know, by eliminating a lot of costs, what that does is leave you a lot of risk, you know. That's what that does. And then, two, you know, we talked a lot about insurance and things of that nature, but a lot of people need to realize when you're starting a business, one of the key fundamentals of where you're going to make a lot of money is through the taxes, you know, how much stuff you can actually mark off. If you have a at-home business, you know, you can write off your rent or your house payment or condo payment or whatever it is, you know, and the tax laws. So, you know, looking at the tax laws for businesses and looking at things that you can write off when you're running your business, that's why a lot of people start their own business. You know, we have these things called individual contractors where, hey, I contract myself out to do this job and you pay me so that way I can do my own taxes. And the reason why a lot of people do it that manner is because you can write off so much stuff you can write off, and you'll be able to save more money in the long run than if you actually had a business, if you actually had a job, you know, where when you're going to work, trust and believe the business where you're working at, they're writing off all that in their taxes. You know, that's where the money is made, is in their taxes.
Well, you know, and another thing too, for startup business, if you want to really start a business, you need to get a area where you get paid on commission, straight commission.
Mm. Yep,
that's how you make money. You salespeople, the highest paid people in the United States, are people that sell products. But most people don't want to work off of commissions because, you know, they don't want to get paid what they work. See, in sales, that's all I've done for the past 20 years is sales. You get paid in sales just what you work. If you don't make any sales. You don't have any commissions. You don't have any income. That's all you work that week. But people mm-hmm. really want to go after it, and they have ability to talk. And I see some people. I've heard a few people on your show. I know they can sell. I can talk to them. I tell them how, show them how to sell. And I know they can sell. I can listen to them talk to you.
I like commission any day. I put commission over anything any day.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I had a job. It's back years ago, and they offered me. This was back years ago. They'd offered me a draw. I turned down the draw because I had made up my mind I'm going to be independent. I said, I'm going to start my own business, but I'm doing it in sales, and I'm working off commissions. And the lady told me, she said, oh, you know, you got a family and everything. You need that draw so you can make it. I said, well, ma'am, I tell you, if I can do what I have to do to get the draw, I don't need a draw because you have to do certain things
mm-hmm.
to get that draw.
Yep.
So I went on straight commission, straight commission. And I was so hungry and scared. I was scared. I had a family. You know, everything. I was dependent on that commission. But I made it, and I did good in it. And I tell you, within 7 months, they offered me a district manager's job. And I turned it down. They said, why would you turn down a job like that? I said, first of all, I make more money than my district manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I was arrogant, too. I was kind of cocky back then. And I said, yeah, I make more money than my district manager. Why would I take on all that headache of a district and supervise another salesman when I can just do my thing and make my commission and keep going? So
revolves around risk. You're absolutely right. That all revolves around risk. You know, some people, you know, they're not confident in themselves, and they're like, hey, I don't want to take on that risk where I can possibly come home with this. And so they go for the safety. You know, that's why I always tell people you have to evaluate risk. And, you know, as far as being a business owner, for risk takers. Those are for people who are willing to take risks.
And
it's high risk on high rewards. High risk also on high losses.
And if you can't sell anything, you're not going to make any money as a businessman.
Anyways.
Everything involves a sale. You have to sell services or goods, period.
Mm-hmm.
If I own a restaurant, I got to sell food. I have sales. So you have to
mm-hmm.
be sales oriented to make money. Period. You don't find yourself, I'm going to have a business that don't involve sales. Everything involves a sale.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't have any money. So you have to make that sale.
Well, I could think of that it still involves sales, I would say, would be a non-profit. But even at that, you got to sell your business to the people who are providing
you
the resources,
right. Your
you know, the money, you know.
Right. Even a non-profit, I don't know what non-profit doesn't have a sale. Because most non-profits,
they have to sell themselves.
Most non-profits get a percentage of the money they raise.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way non-profits work. You can take
mm-hmm.
a non-profit. They're going to get about 20% of the non-profit.
I always thought that was funny because when I was in class, you know, we was talking about like nonprofits and stuff like that. They was like, a lot of people think nonprofits don't make a profit. They make money.
And I can give you personal experience about what I thought was a nonprofit. And some friends of mine said, Chuck, you went for that. Because I did donations. I'm going to even call the name of it because you'll know. They beat me. I found out that they beat me. They got me. They took me. And because friends of mine that knew how it worked, they said, Chuck, them people get a percentage of everything you give to them.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what? I thought all of it went to them. They said, no, that's a nonprofit, but they go off of a percentage. And I think they were getting something like 20% of everything they raised.
When you see those shows, when you see those commercials come on talking about saving the kid in Africa, you know, 10 cents a day, this, that, or the other, you know, people making money off
of
that.
Well, it's funny you mentioned this, but this was one of them kind of plans.
Yeah, I know. I could tell by the way you talked about
it. No, it's funny that you mentioned it, but I didn't want to say it, but it was. It was one of the plans, too. It's strange that you mentioned that, but that was one of the plans, one of those plans off one of those type of program, and they nailed me.
Because I don't know if you recall this or not, but it was several years ago. Like one of those companies actually got a lot of backlash because you know they was talking about I think it was like 50 cents a day or something like that, and like you know a lot of their donors thought you know all of the money was going there, and realistically out of the 50 cents that you sent per day, you know only 10 cents was going. You know, they had a lot of backlash on that, and so like some of those corporations now, some of those nonprofits now start to even advertise how much of your money is actually going in there to try to negate
right.
some of that. But no,
right.
you're 100% right. I we talked about that in class as well. I thought that was very interesting. And I was like, wow, they're getting people.
So when you get right down to it, everything involves a sale.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere everybody's making money off the sale, and there's no way you can get around it. And I think that's one of the fastest way to get ahead in business. If you want to start your own business and start making money with very little over cost. Because when I started selling, I really didn't have any overhead because I had all of my living was covered, and I worked from the house, so I had no expenses except for my gas. When I, you know, for my driving expenses, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold insurance and securities, and I was good at it. That's why I did very well. That's why they offered me that job, and I turned it down because I was good at selling. I can sell products, and I hear a lot of people on your phone calls. I know they can sell. I can tell how they talk. They can sell. And it's something I think, especially blacks, minorities, they don't realize the opportunity for selling products and services. They get paid just what they're worth. Get them on a commission, and they will make
mm-hmm.
a lot of money.
What I will say about commission, though, is you got to make sure that you are getting paid your worth, because even if you're on commission, they're going to try to lowball you. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're going to try to keep as much money inside as they can. You know, they're going to always try
it
to underpay you.
What field you're in?
Me or the caller? What?
No, I'm talking about for far as commission. It depends on the field you're in.
Well,
what kind of contract
well,
you have.
Yeah.
Right, how it works, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but most commissions, if it's a reputable company, but what you have to really watch with all of them on commission sales is they're always trying to charge off something. They are notorious for that. Because I worked with a company that they were big too. They were real big. And they're the only company that I did take a draw from because I knew that your draw was really your salary. And so I knew that but the draw was good. It was like years ago, and this was like $1,500 a week. Years ago, and that was a good draw, a weekly draw. And I knew that was really all I was getting paid. So if you get a commission like that, then you're all right. But you have to watch charge-offs. That's how they get your commission sales. They're going to write something off and charge it back to you. So you have
mm-hmm.
to be careful about that. Yeah, but I knew that because I knew how the guys operated. That's how they operated, so I knew that. So I said, my draw is the sale. That's like a job, really. And you pick up some other benefits, but really, basically, you know you're only going to make what that draw is,
mm-hmm.
no matter how they structure your commission. And that's just smarts right there, street smarts right there. Yeah,
and then, too, just to talk about a little bit of street smarts, you know, like when you're working on commission, you start to pay attention to other things. You know, you start to pay attention to how much money the company is bringing in. You know, I know, like in the current company I'm in, 1 month I did almost $100,000 that month, right? And they gave me a $500 bonus. And I started adding
mm-hmm.
it up. I was like, man, that's 0.05% of what I brought in. You know, so like when you start working on commission, not only do you get paid what you're worth, and like so those who put in more work get paid more, but you also start looking like, hey. Do I really want to take this risk? Far as, you know, do I want to go off and do this on my own? You know, like, and the business that I'm in now, like, I tell people all the time, I'm like, look, If you're bringing in the company $1 million a year, I don't know why you're still here. You know, like, I mean, that's $1 million that could have been in your pocket. You know, especially if you already have your networks and things like that already, you know, built up. You know, and
well,
that really comes from, you know,
they like the security of a company that they're selling for. That's all that is.
That's exactly what I talk about when I talk about risk. Because, like, for me, I'm just like, you know, that $1 million isn't good enough security for me. You know,
that's right. that's the way I would think too. That's right.
You know, so. And it, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people are very nervous when it comes to not knowing how much they're going to make, you know, this month, or not knowing how much they're going to make this week, or not knowing how much they're going to make this year, you know, and that typically, you know, have a lot of people looking for, you know, secure jobs. You know, I just want my salary. I just want to do my job and go home. You know, I don't want to have to deal with the headache and stress of this and
right.
that, you know.
For that.
And for those people, you know. Huh?
Right. No, I said when you know that you're going to get guaranteed payment, that is that's a penalty that you pay for that guarantee.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I tell 100%. You one thing, I was scared when my first commission job, I was scared. I mean, I was scared. I mean, I couldn't believe it because I had, at the time, then I had 3 kids.
Hmm.
And I didn't know how I was gonna live. I was strictly with a prayer. That's it. And but I had to do it because I could see that I'm not going anywhere. But I tell you what, once you get the secure feeling that you can do it yourself, and I've been doing it for over 15, 20 some years, I've been doing that on commission, straight commission. Then now you don't worry about it. You're concerned about it because it's not a guarantee, but it's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. Once you get the guts to do it, and you know you can do it, and if I don't make any money, it's because I didn't work, and I know it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I got penalized for that. So, hey, once you get that mindset, then you're all right. You can work commission jobs. Because with sales, it's a numbers name, a numbers
mm-hmm.
game. You do so many numbers, you're going to make a sale. I know if I make a certain kind of presentation on a product, I know I'm going to make so many sales because I watch my numbers and I know my closing
exactly.
ratio. And I know my closing ratio, all I know is I got to do a good pleasant presentation and I'm going to make that sale. And it's just like clockwork, but I got to go to work. And sometimes I get lazy and I don't want to go
mm-hmm.
to work. I pay for it too. I don't have no check neither.
Right.
So
I know my first commission job. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I'm finished.
I would say my first commission job. I was, I was what, 20, 21 years old. And I know how you said you were scared. Me, I was excited. For me, when I first got on commission, I thought that was the best thing in the world. You know, because at the end of the day, I know that I'm a hard worker. I first started off working when I was 15 at KFC, right? And I was making about, I think it was $5.75 an hour, you know? And I would work my butt off to be this good employee and things of that nature. And I'm working like, well, this person make more money than me, and they don't do nothing. So when I first got my commission, when I got my first commission job, I was excited. I was like, all right, now I can get out here and I can make as much money as I want. You know, I dictate that. You know, and one of the things that I do want to talk about, you know, before we run out of time, is the mentality that a person needs to have, you know, the mentality a person needs to have when you're running a business and or when you're on commission, okay? And you have to understand the business cycle. You know, every business, no matter how good you run your business, is going to go through the business cycle, okay? What is the business cycle? The business cycle consists of the increase, which you initially, you know, start the uptrend. This is really looking at graphs and things of that nature when you're looking at your numbers, as the previous caller was saying. So not everything is going to be on an up and up. Not everything every day is going to be, you know, I'm getting 100% of this or that. You know, you got to realize some days you are going to take losses because it is a numbers game. But, you know, as long as you stick to your numbers that, you know, you're going to be able to bounce back, right? So the business cycle really, you know, you have your peak. First you have your expansion. Your expansion is where, you know, you're growing at a, you're doing higher than what you normally did. Let's say, you know, one day you made $5, the next day you made $7. You had a $2, you know, expansion. The next day you made $10. All right, now you had a $3 expansion from the previous day, $5 from the day before that. Then, and that expansion is going to continue to go until you hit what you call a peak. The peak is the highest amount that you're at before you start a recession. Now, a lot of people get scared and nervous when they hear the word recession, right? But every business is going to go through a recession. You know, and that could be seasonal recession. That could be yearly recession, right? And really depends on how long that recession lasts that is where we dictate whether it's a depression or not. Then you have what you call your trough. The trough is when you're actually starting to come out of that recession, when, you know, business is picking back up and you're making more money, and then you go right back into the expansion phase. Well, first you have the recovery, and then you go, once you recover back to your baseline, then you have to go back into the expansion. And the reason why that's so important and for people to have an understanding of what that business cycle is and why that's so important, because you're going to have days and you're going to have months, even years, where it's like, hey, you know, I didn't take a loss. Well, guess what? When you was in your expansion, if you saved and you prepared for that recession, you know, you'd be able to make it out. And then, two, you're always thinking when you're in that recession that, hey, I know that this recovery is going to happen. I know this expansion is going to happen. And then when you're in that expansion, when you're making, you know, more money than you normally make, you're not thinking, okay, I can blow all this money now because I'm making so much more now. You have an understanding that eventually you're going to hit a peak, and you're going to go back to a recession. And that's not necessarily going to be a no fault of your own or a no fault of how you run your business. It can be, but, you know, most of the time it's not. And these are natural business cycles that even our economy, the United States and world economy, go through as well. So by having an understanding that, and that's really where you get into money management, you know, how you actually are managing your money, how you actually are managing your capital, how you're actually managing your resources. Do we have another caller?
No.
Okay. You know, that's one of the things that you really have to understand, because you don't want to be spending your money in expansion like a recession is never going to happen, okay? Because if you do that, when that recession do hit, you know, you're going to be like, oh, well, I'm used to making this, I'm used to making that. And that's something that, honestly, you look at a lot of, like, entertainers, whether they be rappers, singers, you know, ball players, or whatever sort, you know, in their career, they're like, hey, well, you know, I just got this $1 million check. Cool, I'm ready to live it up now, right? And the mindset at that point in time in their head is like, I'm going to always keep getting this check, right? But for those who retire or get hurt, or guess what, you don't get that big mega million dollar contract the next year, because, I mean, most people don't get it all the time. Like, not everybody's LeBron James. Not everybody's Kobe Bryant. Not everybody's MJ, you know? So, that's why you see a lot of NBA, NFL players, or entertainers, I say. I use entertainers because their money is always seasonal. It might be in season for 10 years, you know, but, you know, and you can get royalties. I'm not saying that, like, oh, now people can use your music and just steal from you or anything like that, but you're not always making the same type of money that you was making in the past. And that's the same thing with us in life. You know, when we start our careers off, you know, even if we decide we want to go get a job, you know, we're not going to always make the same amount of money. Typically, you make more money as you move throughout your career. But you get to a point where you say, hey, you know, I made my money. I'm good. I didn't save. I didn't put this money here. It's building interest there. I don't have to work as hard. I don't have the same amount of money coming in. but I didn't use money. Use money management to my benefit, so that way I don't have to worry about running out or worrying about how I'm gonna, you know, pay my bills, how I'm gonna pay my rent, and things of that nature. And that's why it's really important to save. You know, one of the biggest important things to working in a convention, and more importantly, running a business, is knowing how to save. Because some people have what they had a disease. It's a hole in the pocket disease, where, you know, you put money in your pocket and you just itching to spend it. You spend it on anything and everything. You know, you don't want to save. You know, because your thought process is, I can make more. You know,
you have to watch out if you're on the commission sales. Because I remember in my younger days when I was selling commission, you have to really watch it. Because if I make $1,000 that day, I spend it too.
Right. Right.
And that's one of the things you have to watch in commission sales, because I had sales forces that I would have guys working under me. And one of the things I would do is I would keep them on a lot of debt. I would lease them cars and everything where they have to have a lot of expense. And I tell you, because I know they got to work, because they got to have that money. Yeah, and I use that. I would give them Lincoln's cars as an incentive to as a salesman, and because I knew with sales, if you got obligation, you have to make money. You will make the commissions, and I would when I was more younger and not as wise, I tell you, I would spend that money. I would make $1,000 a day, and I'll spend that money. I mean, all of it. That money.
You're going to the club, huh? You're going to the club.
That's right. So you have to be careful with commission sales, because if you're good, you will. If you don't have the discipline, it took years. As you get older, you get more wise, you know. But when I was younger, I didn't say nothing about that. Nothing about it. I really didn't. So that's one of the pitfalls of commission sales. You make a lot of money, but you spend a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And that's the same, like you were talking about the sports, people in sports and entertainers. They have the same problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but it's fun to have your own business and to be in your own business, but you got to cover those basic expenses for your living. And once you get that, then you can really think about starting your own business and getting
the two to help with that money management is diversifying, you know, not, you know, depending on one source of income. One entertainer that I would advise everybody to, you know, look at and really, you know, mold themselves after is Master P. You know, his mindset was always his mindset was just different. It wasn't like a lot of entertainers where it's like, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to make an album, I'm going to make an album, this is where I make my money. His mindset was always, okay, all right, we made $1 million selling albums. All right, now I want to get into movies too. So we started making movies and we're making albums. All right, now I want to get into clothing line. I want to have my own doll out there. Another person who's not really up and coming, he's very well known, Soulja Boy. You know, he's like, hey, why I got all these different businesses? I'm trying to be a billionaire. You know, and it's important for us to, you know, support our black businesses. And not just support our black businesses, but it's also important for us to, you know.
We have a minute and a half.
Huh? You said what?
A minute and a half. 1 minute.
Yeah, yeah. 36. Yeah, I see your clock. So it's always important, you know, for us to not put all our eggs in one basket. Once we start making our money, we get our money to work for us. You know, buying some stocks, buying some bonds, you know, setting up other businesses, having multiple businesses going, because that will always alleviate more risk factors from you. So let's say, you know, one business is in a recession. Well, while that business is in a recession, this business over here could be booming, you know, and that helps with, you know, wealth management. And wealth management is something that, you know, everybody needs to really take into account and really start to put up a strong emphasis in. You have anything, Michonne, that you want to add in or throw in there?
Oh, well, I do want to add that anybody black out there
that wants to start a business should at least really consider it.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing like freedom and becoming financially secure. And also, they should also think about generational wealth, passing something on. And thank you for listening.
You will not be able to stay.